Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, Liz Loza, and Matt Harmon. Just the two of us. Just two bros.
Just the two of us.
Are we going to get
the
sued
Will
for
Smith
that?
Song? Is that the Will
is
Smith
that
song?
A, no, it's not Will
I think
Smith.
Somebody sang it first, but I don't know who that was.
I mean, if I sing it, that's different, right? Than if we actually played it.
I mean, you just said a couple of words. I think there's no harmonies. We didn't do some a cappella stuff.
I'm
anyway.
Still trying to get these pistachios out of my mouth.
You have been eating pistachios. Quite
protein.
A, yes.
A lot of protein, you know.
I have a question for you, Matt.
All right. What's up?
If you were to go to Indianapolis, would you partake in some shrimp cocktail at Elmo's?
Oh,
St. Elmo's.
Hell yeah. Look, my...
It's right there.
There, thank you. My hurt feelings about not going to the Combine have decreased, although I was pretty miffed about it for a while. Not that I'm like, I just got to go to the Combine. But, you know, when you have this job, like, you want to experience anything that you can get out of it. Plus, it's like sometimes, too, you know, everybody out there that you know on Twitter is tweeting about being at the Combine.
Some FOMO about
it's a
it.
Little bit of a FOMO thing. So, and plus, like, yeah, I just want to go just to see it once. It's not like every year I'm going to be like, got to get to the Combine.
So what part do you like more, the coaches' conferences or the underwear Olympics portion?
I think that there would be a lot that would get annoying being at the coaches' conferences.
Disagree.
I think that it would be the more informative experience. Like, I think I would learn more being there than learn more watching these guys on, you know, live. Because not to mention, too, like, it's not like an actual game where, you know, DK Metcalf runs like a 4.3 and then they broadcast it on the screen there.
Right.
You don't even know what it is until you check. Like, my friend Marcus was telling me this, that, like, he was there this year and, like, they all saw him run fast. They're like, wow, that looked really fast. And then they all checked Twitter to get the
actual time
of it,
yeah.
You know? So I think that the better experience would be, like, in terms of what I would get from it, learn something, would be the coaches' conferences. But I just want to see the spectacle of the Combine once.
I see. I understand that. I would like to kind of check out Indianapolis. I've never been there.
Well, back to the shrimp cocktail. Yeah, hell yeah, I would. I mean, you know me. I'm pretty open to trying anything when it comes to food. And I definitely think that I would try. Apparently, it's super spicy. I like shrimp.
Horseradishy.
I like cocktails. So you want to put them together. I've had a shrimp cocktail before, but not the...
Well, you're not some sort of plebe. Plebeian. No.
Yeah, right.
Peasant who's never had shrimp cocktail. If you're from the Midwest, like me, you know that anybody who has a wedding where there's shrimp served means that family's rich. Like, if you save up all your money to have shrimp at the reception at a wedding. I did not have shrimp at my wedding. I'm not rich. That's why my family was like, we cannot afford that shrimp, lady.
Isn't it weird with shrimp that, like, because it's very, very good for you, right? You can eat, like, 100 shrimps and it's, like, no calories, you know? And
but
it's
then
all,
you're hungry for, like, 400
right.
more shrimp.
And it also just costs you, like, $1,000 to eat 400 shrimp. You know,
it's
such an expensive food.
I'm not sure that they're really good for you. I mean, I feel like the mercury and the ocean, I mean, there's a lot of...
I'm just speaking from a caloric perspective.
But they're like the boogers of the sea.
I like shrimp, but you know, they also have to be cooked a certain way, too. It's like people are like, oh, I'm going to be healthy and get the coconut shrimp. Like, let me explain something to you, fella.
Also, don't charge me more for peel and eat shrimp. Uh-uh.
Oh,
peel those and then charge
me
more.
Yeah, then I'll pay you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So anyway, back to the actual combine. The coaches portion I found the most interesting. Obviously, the biggest story is Kyler Murray and the Josh Rosen drama in Arizona. There didn't seem to be a whole, yep, Josh Rosen's our guy, period. It was Josh Rosen is our guy,
comma for now.
I don't know how much we're reading into this.
Yeah, where do you stand on, like, if you had to think right now, what happens? Do they draft Murray or do they stand pat with Rosen?
Well, this is assuming rational coaching, which we have been trained not to do. So I think if you are going to take a flyer on Cliff Kingsbury and just dig into the otherness, like the upside of the unknown, then you got to go for Kyler Murray because going half in the bag doesn't work, right? Like if you're going to chase the bag, you got to chase it fully. I would like to see Josh Rosen end up behind Eli Manning and he work as some sort of a half season bridge to Josh Rosen. I think that's probably pie in the sky for me. I don't anticipate that happening. There's another quarterback prospect, Daniel Jones, I believe.
Daniel Jones, yeah.
Who
has Manning ties.
He has Manning ties because of his coach at Ole Miss and his quarterback's coach. And so I see like that's probably aligns with a better or more logical narrative. But I don't know. Where are you? I mean, do you think that they pulled Josh Rosen aside and they were like, hey, buddy, we're just going to like, we're actually going to try to trade down. You're our guy. So forget anything you're hearing. It's all part of the bluster. You're our guy, but we're trying to tempt people into trading with us.
I think it could be that, but I think right now I'm more leaning towards that they do end up taking Kyler Murray. Mm-hmm. And honestly, not only do I think that is probably the smart thing for them if they believe in him as the as a quarterback prospect, because then they can flip Rosen for more assets. And Rosen should be an extremely appealing asset for anybody to acquire, whether or not, I mean, obviously people will still default to their college evaluations of him, and people did think he had a high floor, whatever. But the Cardinals have paid most of his contract, so he'll be an extremely cheap asset to acquire. Most of the – I think it's like over 60% of the money has already been paid throughout the rest of his rookie deal. So you're getting –
so they're just taking a bath on 2018.
Yeah. So basically, not only is it good for the Cardinals if they can get assets for Rosen, it's also good for the rest of the league, because some of these teams that are out of range of a Dwayne Haskins or whatever, whether it be Washington – or Miami, they could potentially acquire this quarter, and it's not great for Rosen. But it could be a good situation. Or I could also see New England getting involved. They apparently really liked him, and they could trade maybe a late first round pick if no one else ponies up a first round pick, and then have a successor to Brady. Either way, I think it's good that we're going to fill two quarterback holes here potentially. I also think Kyler Murray, if you just think he's a better fit for Cliff Kingsbury, and you're, like you said, you're already all in, go for it. They're also rumored to be one of the top three teams that is in on Antonio Brown. The Cardinals could look a lot more fun in May than they do right now, I think.
Oh my gosh, though, with a new coach and a GM who likes to hit the pub, like, yeah. There's a lot of combustibility potential there. Not as much as with the Jets, say, but still a lot. What about the prospects at the Combine? Were there any that stood out to you? I mean, we have to talk about DK Metcalf because he looks like the Hulk, and yet he ran this blazing 40, 4.33 40, and his vertical jump was a 40.5. He also did 27 reps on the bench press, which isn't so much of his bar. You don't get those muscles from like doing just yoga. So.
Right. There was a lot of really impressive players. I mean, the wide receiver group really showed out. I think it's going under the radar because obviously Metcalf, you know, he turns in this great 40. I thought N'Keal Harry ran a good time, 4.59 for what he like. What his issues are supposed to be long speed, whatever. He strikes me as like a DeAndre Hopkins type, that some of these flashier type players, you know, remember back to 2013, like freaking Cordarrelle Patterson and Tavon Austin, mm-hmm. I believe, also went
DJ
in the first
Chark
round.
Last year. I mean, what is it, last year, 2 years ago?
Yeah, a couple
Chark?
Of years ago, yeah. So, yeah, it was last year. He was a rookie last year. Yeah. He's easy to forget about because he was irrelevant. But anyways, so some of these flashier players are probably going to go ahead of a player like Harry, much like they did with Hopkins. But in the long run, I could see him being the better pro because he just does the little things so well. So he's someone I'm excited about. There are other players, too. Paris Campbell blazed at the
I liked him a lot.
He was exciting. Andy Isabella turned in a great time.
Well, we should talk about him because he comps similarly, and I have not dug in on his tape, and I don't have a reception perception model.
I'm banged this year on reception perception with the rookies because part of leaving NFL Network was leaving behind a giant college film database.
You got banged, kid.
I mean, yeah, but it was worth for the money. So.
This Andy Isabella kid, he comps similarly to like T.Y. Hilton or Antonio Brown, one of these smaller slot receivers who's tough and could potentially work outside as well. That's the hope with him. His ceiling is that he could be one of those guys. I don't know. I haven't dug in on enough of his tape to know if that is a more optimistic reading of him than actually...
Yeah,
likely,
for sure.
But he certainly did show well.
Also worth mentioning, Hakeem Butler crushed it, too. He's like a 6'5", 220 type wide receiver. So, and he's not like a Kelvin Benjamin type.
Yeah, what was
type.
His 3-cone, though? Was it? I feel like a lot of the bigger guys.
We're thinking of Metcalf's 3-cone, which was like Tom
Brady.
No,
that was bad.
Yeah. But
2%. It was the bottom 2%.
To be fair, I think he's the wide receiver that I've watched the most of so far. And actually, I think that fits really well with his game because he clearly is athletic and clearly move, and at that frame it's unbelievable. And I think his athletic profile comp was Dez Bryant, and I think that actually makes a lot of sense because Dez to me could separate really well because he's just such an athlete. I mean, he's not a technician, but just have him do what I always hesitate to throw praise on the Hugh Jackson led Cleveland Browns, but I put this information out with Josh Gordon's 2017 reception perception profile. You know, after taking almost 3 years away from football, you'd have to assume that Josh Gordon's not like got the technical nuances
about
just
him. Sure.
Yeah, ready to roll. But what the Browns did with him as soon as they came back is they didn't just throw him right back at X receiver. They used him at flanker. They used him off the line. They moved him around. That made him see a lot more zone coverage. They basically just ran a lot of nines, posts, and slants. And I think you can get away with that with a guy like Metcalf, who may not be a great route runner in throughout the duration of his career, but he can clearly win with the ball in the air. He can get off the line of scrimmage. I think you see enough of that on his tape.
He's just but from a fantasy perspective, he's going to be overdrafted now because of these combine numbers. And sure. Because he's not going to. I mean, year after year, for the most part, we see the Calvin Ridleys, who are known technicians, over someone like a DJ Moore, right, who had all of the measurables about him, produce more immediately because route running is an integral part of the job. And a coach wants to know you're going to show up where the quarterback is throwing the ball. And there's a trust there. So I feel like DK Metcalf, as awesome as this has been for him, like he's having an excellent draft season. He is chasing the bag. But I also feel like the lore around him is now growing and he's absolutely, I mean, we'll have to wait on his landing spot. But assuming it's like an average to good situation, I feel like he's going to be overdrafted because these more technical but less flashy receivers are going to be overlooked.
I think that's usually the case. Yeah, I agree with your analysis on that. Other combine notes. We talked a little bit about tight ends briefly last week. Noah Fant came out and smashed the combine.
He
I kind of feel like it's going
so did Gesicki
under,
last year.
Right.
I mean, let's
we all know that rookie tight ends can take a little while to develop. That's like, the Falcons,
the trope,
Falcons
right?
have allowed the most catches to running backs. Like, oh, did you know rookie tight ends take a little while to develop? Yeah, so we got the bell there. But so that was something to note. There's a lot of interesting tight ends that we mentioned. The running back group really didn't have any big time studs, but to me, I don't really care as much about that. I care where they're going to land. You know, like a guy, you know, we all view him a little bit differently now, but think back to Kareem Hunt a few years ago, what did not have a good combine, lands in a perfect spot, and he's, you know, producing bonkers numbers not too long after.
Well, and he did show up well in the Senior Bowl.
Yeah. Kareem I think Hunt running did. Back is just more about instincts
situation.
And well, situation for sure. I mean, none of it really matters in terms of talent, but I mean, if you want to talk about the position, I do think it, you know, more instincts and more like tackle breaking ability, which I don't think you can really measure at the NFL scouting.
Also, I feel
combine.
Like the combine itself is a wonderful tool for measuring a player's ceiling in a vacuum.
Yeah,
you know, like you want to see how fast this person could be. Like, what running back has incredible breakaway speed? Tevin Coleman is an example of that. But you have to have vision and patience and things that are not measurable in order to, you know, find the holes and break the tackles to get to all of those yards after contact. So
totally.
I feel and like, you know, it's exciting.
It is
also
exciting. Yeah. And last note on the combine, I think, before we can move on. This draft is going to be much more defensive heavy.
Yeah,
and those defensive players crushed it.
I mean, Montez Sweat is like my favorite from
Made
Mississippi State. I have been keeping an eye on him. Everyone knows Nick Bosa. His family's in football. He's going to be one of the top, potentially the top pick in the entire draft.
Well, he's a real gem too.
Quinn and Williams out of Alabama would be. I think those are like the 1-2s, right? Mm-hmm. But then the rest, there's a really like a lot of talent in this class, but Montez Sweat out of Mississippi State, I really, really liked him, and I like Ed Oliver from Houston as well.
Yeah, he's intriguing. Gets a lot of Aaron Donald. You know, people. I love when people do this in draft season because they're like, I don't want to comp him to Aaron Donald,
but he sure looks like Aaron Donald.
Yeah, right. It's like, well, you basically just did it. I mean, what you might as well go all in. You know, at this point, I don't know. It's some of these. It's player comparisons are hard because you don't want to be so boisterous as to say, like, I think, you know,
it's ceiling talk. It's all we just have to remember during draft season. It is
ceiling
talk.
Well, it's
just
a comparison. Like, when I say N'Keal Harry kind of reminds me of DeAndre Hopkins or Larry Fitzgerald, I'm not saying he's going to turn into those players, but he's on that axis. And, like, what do you want me to do? You want me to compare him to some like third stringer that nobody freaking knows about,
right?
So that I'm like, oh, well, he kind of reminds me of, I don't know, this is
Farrow
not
real. Cooper,
yeah, right?
Or,
like, cool, everybody listening knows what I'm talking about. Great, great stuff. All right. Anyways.
Also, this was not a combine fact, but I really like Hunter Renfro. I'm just going to throw that out. He's like besties with Adam Humphries and called him the Spartanburgs.
All those boys.
Oh, my gosh.
Him and what's his name?
Well,
Ryan Switzer and Julian Edelman and
I'm
Danny Amendola.
Hunter Renfro,
they all go out and get coffee together.
This is the guy,
Braxton
Hunter Renfro.
Berrios. I mean, they're all out there.
I'm just keeping an eye on him.
Yeah, sure.
Brett, did you want to say something? Producer
Speaking
Brett.
Speaking of Adam Humphries. I was trying to move it along.
Oh,
I thought we were going to talk free agency.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Humphreys coming.
Is a free agent, but
well, he will be. I mean, in the coaches' conference of the year, the coaches' press conferences at the combine, Bruce Arians laid on the platitudes about Adam Humphreys. Likes a lot of what he does. Really wants to get him back, except wants to get D-Jax back and
wants other players. Like, band back. They don't have a lot of cap room.
No.
We always think about the Bucks, like, oh, they got all this money to spend, and they could free up if they really want
to dig
into their
defense.
If they got
rid of some defensive players, right. Yeah. And if they, I don't know if D-Jax is going to go. I think D-Jax wants to go, but I don't know if that's going to happen. And I just feel like Humphreys is the most expendable of those options. And he is going to command upwards, according to Yahoo's own Therese Paylor, somewhere between 10, asking for 10 and 14 million. Now, I saw another quote out of a Buccaneer local source that said he was asking for around 8.
Yeah.
So I think probably 7 is what he'll end up getting, right? Like, if you're asking, this is agent talk, you're going to ask for 10, knowing that you're going to meet around 7. So
that,
6.
That people's response to that tweet got on my radar because I think most, like, if I asked 90% of football fans who Adam Humphreys is, if they don't, like, hardcore play fantasy, they'd be like, I don't know who the hell that is. So fair for people to be like, what the hell are you talking? Because people reacted like, oh, LOL, what are you talking about? But, like, with the Golden Tate part of it.
This is the part that gets on me, too, because Golden Tate is going to be 31.
But also, he was producing the best yards per game that he's ever had since 2014.
Sure.
When he was with Detroit last year. I think people are unfair to Golden Tate based on what happened in Philly, because he's on pace for 100 catches, over 1,100 yards before leaving Detroit. I think that Golden Tate is a great signing in free agency. If you get him for 3 years at $10 million per year.
But I would disagree, because he might be a great signing, but he is not the value signing. I would say that Adam Humphreys, who's 25, versus Tate, who's going to be 31. Yeah. We've seen Tate's ceiling. We know what that is. We've seen hints or glimmers of Adam Humphreys' ceiling. Assuming Humphreys at just 25 can continue to ascend, we know he can. I mean, he's Golden Tate light. He's Julian Edelman light. Like, this is the trajectory he's on. So why would I pay, I don't know, let's say $10 million annually, we should also note, $10 million annually on a three-year deal for Golden Tate, who will be 34 at the end of that deal, versus Adam Humphreys, who's still under 30 and probably going to get, $7 million annually? Like, do you want to spend $21 million?
I think he's a better player. I mean,
now?
Yeah, but I think even in three, I think Tate's ceiling is inaccessible to Adam Humphreys.
Oh, you do? Because, so I don't agree with that.
Because I believe Tate, you know, we talk about, like, the slot receiver archetype, right? Like, I think Tate not only, you know, gets open versus zone coverage, you know, whatever, all those short routes, I get it. But Tate also is great on contested passes. He brings a physicality both in that section of the game and also after the catch. I really think that he just brings something different to the slot receiver position than most do. I mean, if we were having this conversation in September, I would have said that, you know, he's right up there with Doug Baldwin or Jarvis Landry as potentially the best slot receiver in football.
Jarvis Landry and Golden Tate are very different receivers, though.
But I'm just saying in terms of the slot receiver archetype. Yeah, they definitely are different.
They play a very different kind of game. I just feel like Adam Humphreys' game comps more similarly to Golden Tate's niche within the greater slot receiver genre.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So I'd like to see Adam Humphreys, who I should mention at this point is the seventh player in my 10 most interesting players of the offseason. I think he'd do really well in New England. I'd like to see him as the successor to Julian Edelman, another weapon for, I mean, unless, you know, I just don't see Cole Beasley being that option, who's also a free agent.
Apparently he wants $20 million guaranteed.
It's insanity.
This
is why I think Adam Humphreys is so interesting, because there's this glut. You've got Jamison Crowder, Cole Beasley.
I was going to say, I wouldn't overlook Crowder either.
Can he stay healthy?
That's the obviously right? The question, which is why I think he'll come at perhaps the biggest discount of anybody that we're talking about here, is because of the injury concerns of last year.
And he's older than Humphreys.
He's 27, yeah. So
Humphreys is the youngest of the batch. Also, interestingly, in high school, Humphreys played cornerback, running back, and was on the basketball team.
Well, if he was on the lacrosse team, he would already have that Patriots contract. Because, you know, Bill Belichick, I don't know if you know about this, but he's a big lacrosse guy.
Yeah, but Chris Hogan's an outside receiver, which is another misconception.
Did you see Chris Hogan apparently has, there was a tweet that went out, I think it ended up getting deleted, that it was like 25 teams are interested in Chris Hogan. I was like, this definitely
in the
is,
AF or AFL,
I was like, no, this is definitely 25 like teams run by fantasy writers, because every year Chris Hogan is like the darling of.
Yeah, I made a mistake on this. I don't want to talk about him.
All right. Move on.
So a week from now, free agency officially opens. What are you most interested in? What piece of it are you most interested in seeing?
Well, we
unfold?
Got all the franchise tags out of the way, which
mostly defensive players.
Yeah, mostly defensive players. I think obviously Le'Veon Bell will be, everybody's going to be interested in that. And my opinion on this has changed. And we'll talk about this on our live stream today, Liz.
Plug it.
I guess it's going to have already happened, though, by the time the podcast posts.
Yes.
But you can go back and watch it on our Yahoo Sports Twitch page or on our Yahoo Fantasy Twitter page. Liz and I are going to debate all these free agents' best landing spots. I've already written the article for 20
of
these guys.
How are we debating it? Did you bring hot sauce or booze or anything to keep me occupied, or you just were like this?
This is what we did for the quarterback one. We're going to be putting heads on the wall.
Oh, we have faces?
Yeah, we have faces. Poor Avery has printed out 21 players for us to stick on the wall.
Cheers, Avery.
And 32 team logos. So she's been very, very busy.
She's up in some Joanne fabrics every week.
Seriously. So yeah, you can watch that. We'll talk about this. But my opinion on Le'Veon Bell is changing now. I think I've long thought it was going to be the Jets that sign him. Mm-hmm. Now I think the Jets signed Tevin Coleman and the Raiders signed Le'Veon Bell.
Antonio Brown was also like linked to the Raiders.
I think the Raiders are going to make big moves this offseason.
Why would you do that if you were Gruden? Because you have all of this.
You're Gruden. You're a cartoon character.
I know. I mean, do you think he's going to like upgrade to DSL anytime soon?
Maybe.
People are probably like, what is DSL?
Yeah, I know, right? I didn't think about it for a second. It's like DSL. Anyways.
You mean he watches things on his TV?
I'm going to make a note about that. But anyways, yeah, Gruden, I think they're a wild card in all of these negotiations. Not only do I think they'll go after one of these edge rushers like Ziggy Ansah that's on the market, too.
So the Raiders are basically the new Miami Dolphins.
Yes. Well, because I think
it's Miami West.
I do not think they want to. Everybody will say, yeah, they've got Gruden on the 10-year contract, you know, whatever, whatever. But I think they want to start winning some games. I don't think they want to be a laughing stock 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, Gruden could get away with it, but I don't think his ego will allow it.
No, and I don't think Mayock wanted to come in there to be joked at either.
Yeah.
So, and I think
there's Kyler Murray rumors around them.
There are definitely
that is the
a
wrong
wild card.
System for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, that would not be fun. But they're not at all hiding the fact that they definitely really like him. So I do think that he ends. I just have a feeling that they'll end up outbidding everybody because A, they can, and B, I really do think that Gruden wants old school Gruden doesn't want one of the best running backs in the league to be the centerpiece of his offense. I don't think so. Yeah.
I want to see where Tyrell Williams lines up.
Yeah.
That is one of my top choices.
I want to save all this for the live stream later so we can react in real time, but I have a very interesting
I don't think our pod producer wants us to save things for another platform friend.
I was going to say move on.
All right, cool. I'm intrigued. John Brown, I'm knocking on wood that he ends up in a good landing spot. Watch out, Bucks, by the way. That would be an interesting one. I don't think
a reunion.
I don't think they can justify spending the money on receiver.
If they get rid of DeSean Jackson and Humphreys, they could.
They could, but then because they're still in cap problems either way. But nevertheless, that's an interesting spot to watch out for a reunion.
Quan Alexander's not going to stay with the Bucks, do you think? I don't think so.
I think with the money
coming
problems
off
that
of
they
an
have.
Injury. Yeah. And there's such a good deep. Anyway, we do not need Bucks tonight. In fact, we're going to talk about the AFC North. Matt, kick it off. This is your division by division pressing questions.
Which
we're
mercifully is over. I was complaining to Brett before we started here. I was like, I wrote this like two months ago. I don't even care anymore about these questions. But now we're just.
Great. We got to let the good fans of Detroit hear about their team.
We've covered the Browns. Let's start with those good fans of Cleveland.
But, yeah.
I mean, how's the momentum going to keep going?
Well, that's
here?
The pressing question. How do we maintain that second half momentum? I think we'll see the Browns also be aggressive players in free agency. I wouldn't be surprised if they go out and they look to target a wide receiver like a Tyrell Williams, like a John Brown, because I think that, as I have mentioned to you before, Baker was top six in deep passing yards despite not despite not playing the entire season mm-hmm. there. And I think they could look at a guy like Williams or Brown and be like, we can maximize the clear deep ability that Baker has as a passer to make frickin' Breshad Perriman relevant. And I think that we're going to see someone like Williams or Brown or maybe another rookie get in there and upgrade. Also, I think they make some additions to the line. I think a top three wide receiver core of hypothetically say John Brown, Rashard Higgins, and Jarvis Landry. I mean, that makes my heart flutter a little bit.
A little bit. So my questions are all about the wide receiver core as well. I wanted to know if Antonio Callaway can make the leap. He had seven drops, which was the 13th most among receivers. But after Cleveland's week 11 bye, so I think it's interesting because you're right, Baker didn't start. I think it was he came in week 3 and he didn't officially become the starter until week 4, so a month into the season. There's a lot of chemistry that needs to build, rapport that needs to be refined. So I like to look at a team, and plus the coaches got fired and changed, so there was a constant flow of transition for this team. So I like to look after the team's bye, which is usually when teams shift. You know, like there's a marked change mm-hmm. after a lot of teams' buys. Even if they have an earlier buy, decisions get made during that week off. So Callaway managed after the team's week 11 buy 3 top 25 fantasy performances, and that was over his last 6 games. So not bad if you used him appropriately off of the waiver wire. And you mentioned Hollywood Higgins. I know this is a guy you like. This is a guy who, again, did not test very well, but was known as a very technical and precise route runner, a technician. If you will, that's a word people like. He's a technician.
I'm big on technician. I will never blow out the candle for Higgins.
I don't think Freddie Kitchens likes him so much, though. I went back and
Baker
looked at
likes
his.
Him, though.
Well, if you look at his snap count, though, he was on the field anywhere between the entire season, 30% to 75% of a team's plays, but his snap share was much higher before Kitchens took over the offense.
Freddie Kitchens. I'm out on Freddie Kitchens.
I'm just kidding. Well, I love him.
I was just making a joke.
I'm not trying to make a mountain out of that molehill, but I did think it was an interesting. Why wouldn't you have the most precise guy? Maybe you don't need the most precise guy because you've got a young quarterback who's like feeling himself and knows how to improvise.
Yeah.
And so you'll find the deep ball. So anyway, let's talk about the Bengals. Let's go across the state.
Pressing question. Can Zach Taylor bring juice to this offense? Because I think they really need it. Look, the Bengals have...
I mean, he was bringing coffee 2 years ago.
I know, right? So. What a meteoric rise. He looks so young, too. How old is he? Is he 33 or 34, something like that? I don't know. Crazy. But he looks very young. I mean, people that are 34 look
35.
Very young and fresh.
35. You know, he knows... Sean McVay, the fellow
you didn't know his name off the top of your head there.
Yeah, I know. A little bit slow today.
Anyways, this offense to me still has some potential. I mean, the offensive line took steps last year. We know Andy Dalton can be a productive quarterback when the talent around him is great. I don't think the talent around him, they apparently, well, their GM or whatever, or someone called that their trade rumors about John Ross fake news. Whatever.
Well, somebody's planning those.
Yeah, right.
Somebody's.
I think maybe it's Ross's camp. Like, get me out of here. But anyways, you know, AJ.
Also, that guy should be glad to have a job after his rookie season.
It was a mess. But Tyler Boyd broke out last year. Joe Mixon definitely broke out last year. They're an interesting offense to watch. I also wouldn't rule out them making a minor free agent quarterback addition because I would just think
Oh, my God, Josh Rosen.
That's interesting. I mean, why wouldn't you, though? Like, if you're the Bengals. Well, I don't think that's the worst. Look, I think there's worse places.
AJ Green is 31 years old. I mean, this is the. Like, you have been. AJ Green has been carrying that offense on his back since he's gotten there, really.
Yeah.
Right? And he's been dragging Andy Dalton into production. He's 31 years old. He only played 9 games. He tried. Well, we appreciate the, like, effort and grit trying to get back in week 13, but he lasted, I don't know, a whistle. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't work out well. He had toe surgery in February. I just don't know. I don't think Tyler Boyd is a number one receiver.
He flashed
because he was doing his job as a number two receiver. And if you look at the games that AJ Green wasn't present in, Tyler Boyd only had 2 red zone targets the entire time, and they were both in 1 game against Oakland. And he didn't finish the dang season. Joe Mixon, to me, is the brightest spot on this offense in terms of straight up production and chain moving.
And running backs don't matter.
So. Well, I think he might matter a little bit because he can find holes even in a really bad offensive line. So you've got to give him some cred there, but he could break down quickly.
I have decided, actually, just as a side note, preview content down the line, I think I'm going to actually finally write about, like, my very mixed feelings. As much as I troll about running backs don't matter, it's like a mixed feeling sort of thing. I don't want to get into it on the podcast, but at the end of the day, right, like, you kind of feel, with a guy like Le'Veon Bell, it's like, you know, I don't think it's smart for any team to sign Le'Veon Bell to the money that he wants.
$45 million.
From a team building perspective. But at the same time, like, don't you also kind of feel like a jerk being like, I don't want this guy to get paid? Like, I think all these football players should get paid. You know, I think they should all get as much money out of this horrifically violent sport as they possibly can. I don't know. It brings up a lot of confusing feelings in me. I didn't mean to derail the conversation like that.
That's okay. Let's talk about the Steelers. All right. Since you talked about Le'Veon.
Since we talked
about derailing. Yeah.
The Steelers train is off the rails. My pressing question back then was run it back again or look to the future. And I think I don't think they can really run it back again with Antonio Brown. Like I said, I have not ruled it out that he will be back there in week one. I think with at least some of these teams popping up, even though none of them really make sense for him. I mean, he's even said that he doesn't need to play football, which good on him for that, I guess, if that's what you want. But I don't know. The Steelers offense to me, though.
The Steelers, the truth is, people are talking about, I think what the point that you're getting to is the Steelers don't have to flip him. He is under contract. They can say, all right, like, have fun not collecting any money this year, and we will figure things out. I mean,
yeah, they just went through this.
Yes. So there's a blueprint for how to manage. And while you could argue that the running back position is a little more replaceable, a la James Conner, than the wide receiver position.
100%, because right. I think this offense is screwed without him. This is maybe a hot take.
What happened to your James Washington love from less than a year ago?
I agree with you. James Washington, to be fair, had a very bad rookie season. Yeah. I still like James Washington, but he better be ready to take a massive leap from what we saw last year to starting caliber X receiver. I tweeted this out with Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster's reception perception results from this past year. Totally different players. I mean, these guys might as well be playing different positions. Obviously, they put up similar numbers, but if you look at it, Antonio Brown last year faced press coverage on 47.5% of his routes that I charted. Juju Smith-Schuster, 28.3%, because he plays
so a
inside.
Quarter versus half.
Yeah, he plays inside. He plays off the line. And obviously, I don't think anybody needs to know this, but the data that I've charted over the last now 5 seasons backs up that obviously facing press and man coverage is a huge difference. Juju Smith-Schuster is a 55% man coverage facer. Antonio Brown is up there with these top X receivers at 70.3%. Mm-hmm. That's just a totally different assignment. I don't think that you can have a guy like Juju if he's going to be
your big slot receiver. It requires a different skill set.
A million percent.
And I don't think it's a skill set that
Juju Smith-Schuster has shown to this point in the NFL. So if you're going to remove one of, I think, the legitimately true coverage dictators in the NFL, which is Antonio Brown, along with a small handful of receivers, I just think that changes your offensive composition so much more, obviously, than taking away a running back. And at that point, then, if you don't have Brown there, Smith-Schuster's one of the best young receivers in the league. We're talking, I mean, he's much more of a created player than a player who creates on his own. James Conner, I think, is a good above-average running back, but you have an aging quarterback. There's a lot of questions on this offense without Brown.
You just also don't have your solid outside receiver. And I don't know if your coaching staff is, and you don't have a quarterback who's willing to check down. I mean, you've got this Big Ben improing, doing whatever he wants to do. I don't know if your coaching staff is sly enough like Belichick is to figure out that equation without an X receiver. I mean, you think, I'm just like going through it now. Vance McDonald, like, he was used as a slot receiver in college, so he could fill that position. But now you have just a bunch of slot receivers. James Washington, like, I don't think he's an outside receiver, an outside X.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was coming into the league, and I guess I shouldn't give up the ghost so quickly, but I think they will have to make another addition at wide receiver. Right.
You don't have Justin your Hunter climb the ladder, like getting contested catches 50-50.
Yeah, so that was James Washington's game coming out of Oklahoma State. But, you know, again, I don't know that you can really count on him to be a plus starter. I think they would have to make a veteran addition. I think they would get in the John Brown market then if they lose an Antonio Brown. They have to do something. They can't roll out the receiver core as it stands today.
John Brown isn't going to stand up to press coverage at a rate of 75%.
I disagree.
Oh my goodness, you're crazy. He's going to pop a hamstring.
How dare you? He's not in a warm climate anymore. That was what crushed him in Arizona. Man,
you're nuts. Okay. Come on. All right. So the Steelers have a lot of question marks, and if they lose two massive holes, they're going to have to rejigger the whole thing. It's a game of Jenga in Pittsburgh, basically. Let's close things out in the AFC with the Ravens. Come on, Matt, finish strong.
Speaking of John Brown, pressing question for the Ravens to me is, what does building around Lamar Jackson long term look like? Because I think you can give them credit for coming up with this creative, unique attack that they went 6-1 after he took over as a starter. But they were easily the most run heavy team by a decent amount. I think actually 40%, they only passed on 40% of their red zone plays in just two of his starts. And they passed on more than 30% of their first downs in just two of his starts. I mean, they were such an extremely run heavy team.
Well, it's also not good for his body if you're going to make him the franchise quarterback. I mean,
why they have to then take a look at themselves and be like, okay, we can't do this what we did last year long term. But they right now, can you name the Ravens' top four receivers going into this year after they release Michael Crabtree if John Brown walks in free agency? Can you tell me who they're
talking about? Is Michael Campanaro still on that squad?
No. It's Willie Snead, another one of my longtime favorites.
Oh, I think he has potential.
Willie Snead.
But he needs people around
Jordan
him.
Lastly. And there's a couple other goofballs in there, too. But, like, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at nobodies. And they obviously, I think what is interesting about Jackson is that
I think that the Ravens are willing to zag while everybody else is zigging, right? Like, they are a run first. Not just at their quarterback, but like Gus the Bus was a thing, right? Alex Collins was a thing the year before. There's going to be a new version.
Alex Collins.
Yeah. There's going to be a new one of those this year.
Yeah, right.
Although I talked to Tony Jefferson, their safety, and he really likes Gus and thinks the team does too. So
nice. Yeah. I mean, I think they can be a run first team, but building a passing attack around Jackson, I think, is going to become crucial. And to that note, I would say that if you remember Lamar Jackson's game back in college, he had some accuracy concerns for sure back then, but it was mostly on like outbreaking passes, which I frankly thought they threw too much with him this past year. I think if you have a up-tempo, middle-of-the-field passing game under center, I think he could be a much better player in that regard.
This is Ozzie's game. Forget three wide receiver sets. He's going to run a three tight end
set. They have like 100 tight ends still on the roster. Perfect. I mean, Hayden Hurst and Mark Andrews, I think that could be an interesting thing to watch for sure.
Max with seven X's.
Is he still? He's still around.
Crockett, Gilmore. I'll name them all.
Nick Boyle. we've run Ed Dixon. We've run the gamut.
Dixon's in Seattle now.
Yeah, I know. They're not. None of these guys. Not. We're.
Yeah,
the
but at least he's still playing.
Crockett, Gilmore didn't even play tight end anymore.
Didn't he go to O-lineman?
Yeah, he switched to tackle, and I don't think it worked. I don't even know if he's on a team. But anyways, so I do think that we could look at a much more developed and different passing offense in Baltimore this year, and I think it has to happen, frankly, because. By the way, just mind-blowing stat. Only seven passes did Lamar Jackson throw under center this year. All the rest were from the shotgun, which
That's
is crazy.
Stat.
Yeah.
Good seven. Stat, Matt.
Wild.
Brett, can we have a drop for good stat? Good stat.
Good stat, Matt.
Yeah. Just like some sort of
it
good
rhymes.
Stat. Yeah, I like it. Well, it doesn't have to be Matt. Sometimes I also throw out good stats. It would be fun.
No, they're all Matt, attributed to Matt.
All right. I feel
uncomfortable. Let's talk about the NFC North. We got to talk about the NFC North, black and blue.
No wonder Brett's been over there like
staring at the clock.
Okay, NFC North. For the Lions, snooze. Who can help alongside Kenny Golladay? Because right now they are just disgusting on that roster other than him. And he's a good wide receiver, no doubt about it. Oh, yeah, I know he is
Huskies.
One of your boys, but you know, they have Kerryon Johnson potentially coming back, who I think is, you know.
He should be healthy by OTAs, MCL sprain.
Didn't we say at different points this year, like, running back doesn't matter, but like, or running back talent doesn't matter, but I really, he was really good. Like, I almost want to break the mold for, I feel like I've said that or we said
that. Yeah, but his pad level also makes me worried. I'm going to be honest. Like, when I watched his tape, it was really explosive, but I was like, oh, lower that shoulder.
Get down, dude.
And he is coming off of the MCL injury. Reports are that he'll be fine for OTAs, so that shouldn't be much of a problem. Plus, he's young. Here's what we do know. We know that Matt Patricia wants to run the ball, right? He's a defensive-minded coach. Usually defensive-minded coaches want to run the ball because it eats clock away from the opposing defense. There's just a different way to think. So now, Jim Bob Cooter, he is out. He is wherever he is. Daryl Bevel is now the offensive coordinator. the big feather in his cap is that he, you know, discovered Russell Wilson. So is this a fix Matt Stafford, but also let's start running the ball? But also, yes, who are we going to have Matt Stafford throw it to? No Golden Tate. Kenny Golladay can do a lot of the things, but he's going to need some help. There's just no, there's no safety valve unless that becomes Kerryon Johnson, who does have a pass catching ability, and he becomes, you know, the Le'Veon Bell ish sort of player. But he also has to stay healthy.
Yeah, he could end up getting a lot of touches this year because, as we were saying, there's just not a lot of juice here. Let's move on. Team's boring.
Okay.
Packers. The biggest pressing. So, I'm just side note on this. This was one thing to me that got on my radar because I definitely agree that overall, fantasy football has made football observers smarter in terms of they just know more about the league. They know more teams and know more players, you know, in general. But sometimes every now and again, something happens that I think like, oh, see, this is when the discourse of fantasy football makes us actually dumber. And when I saw people say that, oh, Matt LaFleur's first order of business, a few fantasy people I know said this, like, his first order of business, establishing Aaron Jones as a clear RB1. I'm like, oh, shut the hell up. Just because you think Aaron Jones is really good, that is like 10th on the priority list of what Matt LaFleur needs to come in and do to clean up the Green Bay Packers. Clearly, the pressing question, what they have to do is, what does Aaron Rodgers need? Like, that is, they have one of the best throws of the football of all time there. How do they make
absolute control and power.
Yeah, how do they make his life better? I mean, because if you look at what happened last year, obviously the relationship between he and McCarthy deteriorated because there was just no confidence in the play call. I think I was reading something that Graham Harrell, the now offensive coordinator at USC, was saying back when he was at Green Bay, some of the play calls were like a paragraph long. And he even said to the coaching staff, like, if you pay me, I'll make this like easier to digest and simplify. And they said no. So it just goes to show you like how deteriorated that staff was in terms of modern football. But in general, I just think like, also look at the receivers that he had last year. Like alongside Davante Adams, it was, you know, Geronimo Allison, who was like a day three pick a few years ago, and three rookies. It was a very gross, and a Jimmy Graham who can't move anymore. I think they're a team that could make a splash with some of these slot receivers in free agency. Because Randall Cobb, who is one guy, we're talking about all these slot receivers in free agency, and we didn't even mention poor old Randall Cobb because he's not worth mentioning at this point. But they could sign a Jameson Crowder. They could sign a Cole Beasley. They could sign an Adam Humphries. That would be a lot of fun.
I think a Cole Beasley makes the most sense if you're looking like at money and
just something. I think Crowder would make a lot of sense. But just these like layup throws, they need more of those in the offense for Rodgers.
I mean, he also needs a safety valve. And especially because Aaron Jones is not the best pass catcher. He's got fumbling issues. So if your running back, I mean, I think this is why Aaron Jones, as much as we wanted to see him and people want to talk about his
yards after yards, contact per attempt drink.
Yeah, thank you. They want to talk about all of those things. Yards per carry.
Yeah.
Then if he's not catching the ball, like he's not doing the job that is required of him in 2019.
Well, yeah. I mean, LaFleur even said this, I believe, at the Combine press conferences. Like he likes the committee split between Jones and Williams. And I mean, obviously,
get used to it, friends.
Obviously, fantasy Twitter threw themselves into a tizzy right after he said that. But this, you're right to point that out. This is the reality of the NFL in 2019. It does not matter if he is the best runner on the team.
No.
And like, not a soul will argue that. But if he can't pass protect, you know, to the point that they think Jamal Williams can, and if he's not a reliable asset in the passing game, and I don't think Williams like brings a ton of juice.
He's not going to be on the field for all the snaps.
It's not going to happen. That's because it's just, you can't, this is the thing that drives me nuts about people is like, you can't say the running game is so devalued and then sit there and whine about Aaron Jones not getting enough touches because you're inherently like arguing against your own point there. If you think what the Packers need to do, I'm getting off.
Well, let's talk about the Vikings because the Vikings are another
team. Talk about running.
Exactly. That are switching from a pass happy offense to a potentially more run focused offense. I don't want to say run heavy. I think they're run friendly. We've got Kubiak basically calling all of the shots, bringing in his staff. There's sons-in-laws, all the Kubes.
The Kubiak
coming to Minneapolis.
The Kubiak tree is here, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like
you know something about running backs. Terrell Davis definitely still likes him. I think they're probably bros.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone that watched them last year would definitely be like, oh yeah, this is a team that, you know, under Mike Zimmer definitely does not want to be a modern 2019 offense. He wants to throw it back to 1990 with John Gruden. And I think that could be great news for Dalvin Cook, for sure. Kubiak, as you mentioned, is like the assistant head coach. Kevin Stefanski gets to stay around as the offensive coordinator,
but sort of,
because Kubiak, his son's there. His old boy, Richard Dennison, is there. Yeah. You know, the whole team. And I think that could be good long term for Kirk Cousins, like to be in that.
I think it's great for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. It's a more friendly system for what he's used to. Does it change things with the wide receivers, though? Because Stephon Diggs, despite missing a game last year, alongside Adam Thielen, both those guys were top nine in targets last year.
Hot take, he's better than Adam Thielen.
That's the correct take. I tweeted this out about reception perception again with Stephon Diggs. After leading all wide receivers in success rate versus man coverage among the guys charted in 2017, he finishes again at the 97th percentile with a 77% success rate.
Stephon Diggs' biggest problem is durability.
He missed one game last year.
Right. Year before was the groin injury. He didn't play well after it, even though he was on the field, so he wasn't as effective.
He's a freaking star. I mean, he's
in total agreement. I liked his DirecTV commercial or whatever. Geico, I don't know, was something he was commercializing. And it was great. I'm all in on him. Adam Thielen is going to be overdrafted this year. People are going to be wildly disappointed. Give me all the Dalvin Cook shares.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, the question is, are these guys' target loads going to come down?
Yes,
I
think the answer
probably,
is a definite yes.
For both of them.
Not probably, yes. Moving on, let's talk about the Bears. Oh, we're closing this out with the Bears. My off again, on again.
Your fling.
No, man, this is like the ex that keeps calling, and I'm like, it's just comfortable. It's fine. Just tonight. And then it's we're a country song, basically, me and the Bears.
Clearly. Hop on your John Deere tractor and saddle up with Trubisky. Anyways.
We're going to put a mattress in the back of the pickup truck, you idiot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyway.
So the pressing question for the Bears is, how can we kick the offense up a notch to withstand defensive regression? And don't at me, Bears fans. Your defense statistically will regress. It happens every year. You know, the Jaguars in 2017 come at me with you wanted to do your drop.
Don't at me, bro.
That was I talking about again.
Can Vic Fangio leaving in the regression of the defense.
Oh yes,
so you didn't mention Vic, but
so don't at me, Bears fans, because yeah, obviously Vic Fangio is gone, and that's great. I like to say Fangio, but Vic Fangio is gone, and that's obviously tough. But just statistically, all these like defenses like this, it's the most like unstable metrics, turnover, sacks, all those, they fluctuate year to year. Josh Hermsmeyer of 538, I linked this piece in the article, but he showed that that's just the defensive performance is incredibly difficult to predict. That every year, you know, the Jaguars last year think our defense is different. I got Jared Campbell up in here.
Jared Quay Campbell's brother.
He introduced himself yesterday as Jared Campbell. So I can't tell where he wants to go with this name. But anyways, yeah, Calais Campbell's brother, Jared. He
hosts The Rush here at Yahoo.
I'm confused now what I'm supposed to be saying.
Defense is going to regress.
It's going to happen. You know, after being number two in yards per play allowed, number one in drives ending with a score and leading in turnovers per drive, like it's going to happen. So how do you make the offense a little bit better?
This is exciting.
Yeah.
This is exciting because we finally get to see all of the pieces that we thought we might see last year. This is Anthony Miller continuing to be a Cooper Kupp, but better Cooper Kupp.
Doug Baldwin.
Doug Baldwin. I compliment Doug Baldwin too.
Me too.
We do have a lot of stuff in common when it comes to receivers. 7 touchdown season. He's going to improve on this. This is Allen Robinson, who I mistakenly called Robert Woods because to me they are very similar people.
That's so offensive.
But this is Allen Robinson, fully healthy. We saw him have a 100-yard effort in the postseason.
Looked
against
like the Allen
Eagles.
Robinson yes. of old, yes.
This, I am telling you right now, I want Allen Robinson. Finally, I don't have to pay peak value for him. Finally, it's taken two years for his market to slip.
I'll take care of that. I'll hype him up so hard. He'll
don't
be
a, you dare.
Be a fourth-round pick
don't
again by the time
dare.
I'm done.
Oh, Mr. Influencer, look at how much I can drive stock.
I'm uncomfortable with that idea.
So I think this is exciting. All we need is Mitch Trubisky, who the Bears traded up for, who has all of the pieces despite starting 1 year in college, to put it all together. We did see him grow up in maybe one and a half quarters of football in the postseason. Can he
or
keep that momentum going?
Just a half of a
Listen,
quarter.
I'm trying to be generous. We're closing out the series.
I think
it's exciting, though.
I think it is, and I do think one way that they can just make Trubisky fit better with this group is have him throw deep a little bit less. Among quarterbacks that started double-digit games, his deep passing rate of 16.8% of his passes traveling 20-plus yards down the field was second highest only to Josh Allen. So I think that if they rein Trubisky back a little bit and make this more of a short, up-tempo, timing-based offense, if he can execute that, I think this works so much better with guys that are quick separators like a Anthony Miller, like a Allen Robinson as an ex receiver slash guy that they use out of the slot a little bit last year.
Yeah,
I think
they moved him all over.
And Tariq Cohen, of course, I don't think can be discounted in all of this.
It's going to be interesting to see if they trade Jordan Howard.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, yeah, it's so weird. Poor old Jordan Howard, just the peak example of, like, running
best. I got a lot of, like, seeing Tevin Coleman go to the Bears, and I was like, poor Jordan Howard, like, played with him in college, and then his, like, old teammate's going to come back and take his spot.
I don't even see, like how that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think Howard's a great runner, for sure. But, yeah, so I think that's just one way they can make this offense a little bit better as their defense obviously regresses.
Producer Brett, do you have a surprise for us?
We're sorry.
The Harmon Loza helpline is open.
What? We got a sound drop for this new segment. So we teased this on last week's episode. True life fact. Matt and I often get asked for advice on other people's lives about things outside of football, whether it's dog advice, because Matt has a little Charlie, parenting advice, because I have a little one, love, relationships, career building, fitness tips, all of those things. So we open this voicemail line. You can dial the number at 888-859-2466. That's 888-859-2466. Or you can just say 888-85-YAHOO. Leave a message. And we're going to answer some
people's. We're obligated to answer
at least
anything
one call
that you ask. And I do have to read one quick legal disclaimer.
Okay.
Legally, Matt Harmon and Liz Loza take no responsibility for the actions that come from your decision to react to their advice. Specifically, if you take Matt Harmon's relationship advice and your relationship turns to a complete, utter dumpster fire, Matt Harmon is not legally responsible for whatever happens to you or your significant other afterwards.
So we have a few calls this week. We're only going to do one a week. See, we'll start off there. We have a few calls. Someone called about Brussels sprouts or a dog. Whoever you are, we couldn't really hear it. It was hard.
Try again.
Call.
We want
on a phone
to answer a Brussels sprouts question.
I know you
sure
do, or a dog question. But try again on a phone from the 21st century. We'd appreciate it. But we're going to play a different call. Matt told me to play it. I don't know if this is an inside joke or not, but I think Liz will know what we're talking about.
I haven't
once
heard
we play
this call
it
yet, but Matt has.
But Matt has and said we should play this one. So let's go. Here we go.
Hey, this is Brian from Richmond, Virginia. So I'm a pretty young actress. You know, I sound like it. What if I go to an audition and I'm asked to just make out with some dude on a couch surrounded by other people just making out? Is that groovy or should I get out? Thanks.
Well, Liz, you're a what some people would say a attractive woman, and you used to be in the actress business.
I used to be a pretty young actress. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. So here's what not to do when speaking to a lady.
See, this is why I read the legal disclaimer to start.
I think I know a situation that Brian is referring to. So,
oh, do you?
Matt, you know this story, right?
Yeah,
you know
that's story, why we're playing the damn thing on the podcast.
Okay, true story. I didn't even live in Los Angeles yet. I was out here interning for a summer for a casting agent. I was still in college, I believe. Yeah, I was still in college. And the very first audition I got was for this movie called The Room.
Oh!
Yes!
So I went to this audition. Again, I was maybe 19 years old, maybe like 18 or 19 years old, went to this audition, and it was for something called The Room. And there's this auditorium full of young, sweaty, desperate actors. And there's this very awkward Eastern European gentleman.
Well, that's never been confirmed.
I don't know when
I think he's from. I think he's Polish.
I think he's from the planet Neptune. I don't even think he's from Earth.
And he's very bombastic and passionate and throwing sides at people. And he looks me up and down. And I was like, what is this? Like, I'm a college
I'm sorry,
kid.
Just real quick. What role were you trying
so
out for?
I was about to tell you. He looks me up and down and he says, Lisa. You're Lisa. And so I'm like, okay. So he hands me some sides for Lisa, and I get my highlighter out and I start trying to become Lisa. And then I realize there are sofas placed throughout this auditorium and people are making out on them. And so he paired me up with someone, and he and I were to be scene partners, and we rehearsed, and there was the scene was just making out. Like, honestly, it was just making out. And he was, then it was our turn to audition. And this gentleman, what's his name?
Tommy Wiseau.
Thank you. Tommy Wiseau says to me, you have to kiss him with passion. And I said, I don't, I just met him. And he was like, do you want to be an actress? Do you want to be an actress? And so I was like, yes, yes, okay. And so me and this poor kid, he was wearing a teal colored cotton shirt. Like, we made out like nobody's business. Like the kind of making out where, like, you need a full thing of Blistex afterwards. Like, it was just intense. And then he was like, good job. And then I got up and I was like, so this is acting in Los Angeles for an 18-year-old. And the poor guy, he got his car towed because the audition lasted like 90 minutes. And anyway, this isn't advice for you, Brian, from Richmond, Virginia. This is a story about my sordid past.
Brent, are you not so glad that I told
great.
You
this
to
is great.
Play
it's
this?
Not quite advice.
Well, we the advice. Like a,
so here's the advice.
Tear me apart, Liz Loza, drop. That would be it's like a funny
I
pun.
Did get a call back.
Oh,
I got
go.
A call back, and I decided not to go because here's the advice part. My gut was telling me this fool dirty. This is not the way, even if this is the way Hollywood works, I am not interested in partaking in this piece of the game. And so I walked away from what would become an illustrious opportunity.
Have you ever watched The Disaster Artist?
No, I have not. Although, you know, I have another friend who made out with James Franco.
Oh, well, I mean,
who hasn't,
right?
Yeah.
So two of us in this room have met Tommy Wiseau in real life.
And two of us have in this room have made out with James Franco. Just
what?
It's for the audience to figure out who.
I was like, I met Tommy. It was my first celebrity sighting in LA.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I'm trying to find the
so
message.
So he was not even a celebrity when I, like, made out with Scarborough. So, but again, there is an advice piece of it. And that is, if it feels like it is not right or creepy, listen to your gut and get out.
Whether it's a job interview,
yes.
Whether it's an audition,
nobody
whether it's a date.
Nobody should ask you to make out with somebody as part of any. And if you say I'm not comfortable with that and they question your commitment, that is not okay.
Run faster.
Yes.
I thought
run
this was
like DK Metcalf running after the bag at the combine.
I thought this was on Instagram but I can't find it. But the whole reason this came up, Brett, because I've been telling Brett since he's like, we got one call, but it's a little weird. I don't know if we should play it. No, we have to play that one. And I was like, trust me. So Liz told this story on our old Fantasy Live podcast, and this all happened because I...
How did you guys find out about this?
This is the story. So I posted, the group of friends that I worked with at the NFL Network, we did a thing called High Life Fridays, which was we drink a bunch of Miller High Life and watch really shitty movies.
Champagne and beer.
Exactly. So, and one, we were doing The Room, which we'd all seen, but you can never see it enough times. It's amazing if you haven't seen it. And I posted the picture either on my Instagram or Twitter or something, like,
oh,
watch it, revisiting this. And I think Liz slid into my DMs, is like, you'll never believe this, but I auditioned for the role of Lisa. And when I tell you that you made 10 dudes and their two confused women that were in attendance because their boyfriends were there, they're all of the faces melt in the room. When I read that aloud, everybody was blown away. So that's why Gelhar was, of course, like, oh, you got to have Liz tell the story on the podcast.
It's true. True story. I did. I've interfaced with Tommy Wiseau. I made out in front of Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
So like and he looked me up and down and told me I was Alisa. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I mean, have you seen The Room? You ever watched
no.
it? Well, we should watch it sometimes. When we're on the road in Nashville, let's watch it.
Okay.
All right. So recap. Not only did you get great life advice, which is, you know, trust your instincts.
There's
or whatever.
Some universal advice here.
You also got
a specific great story.
You also got a great damn story. So if this is not incentive enough for you sheep to call into the advice hotline, which the number is
888-85 Yahoo,
then I don't know what is. So call the number, leave voicemails, and we will help you solve anything and tell you great stories.
Oh, I'm blushing. We gotta go.
Glad someone's finally embarrassed other than me on this podcast. I'm consistently thrown
out,
under the bus.
Out,
all right,
out.
We are out.